Hello there! Welcome to the International Business Podcast, a show for those who work across time zones, borders, and cultures. I'm your host, Leonardo, from Shanghai, but let's make it simple and just call me Leo. We also have a new co-host, Stefano, based in Paris. Coming up on today's episode.
We had in the company, after that scandal broke, we had in the space of 3 months, 500 inquiries from different companies who were looking to have exclusivity for the Chinese market. I would say that they go into a market, they don't take a structured approach to choosing which markets to go into, and so they enter into the wrong markets. Maybe it's because, you know, the CEO would like to go and play golf in the south of France, so they think France would be a nice market. Or they have somebody who would like to collect air miles, so they take a market who's much further away. You know, Australia is quite good for that if you're based in Europe.
Catherine is an international sales and marketing consultant with over 20 years' experience developing niche products in emerging markets, helping small and medium companies to break through international barriers. You can find more information about Catherine, including her LinkedIn profile, in the show notes. Now, let's begin. Hi, Catherine. I'm glad to have you on. Welcome to the International Business Podcast.
Hi, Leo. It's really a pleasure to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
What makes you an international professional, Catherine? I really want to know.
I think this might be a long list. So it started off, and I was a language student. So, of course, you have this kind of affinity for travel and for other countries. And during my university time, I worked in a couple of countries, in France and I worked in Austria, and decided I wanted to focus on international trade. And in the course of my career, I think I've worked with almost all regions worldwide. So I started working in the UK and in the automotive industry, and worked with all kinds of developing nations and Africa and small places, and did all kinds of interesting things. Then came back to Austria and worked with rubber stamps and infant formula before I ended up in my present role where I'm self-employed.
And looking, let's say, at your perhaps inspiration, or let's say the direction of your career, what drew you? What drew you eastwards during your professional journey?
I think the original inspiration was the fact that I studied German in school also, and the Berlin Wall fell in my final year of school. And I was actually a bit pissed off about that, if I'm allowed to say that on your podcast.
Yes, you can.
Because we actually were studying Berlin since the Second World War. And so everything that we'd been learning about, and it's divided by a wall and everything, was suddenly thrown into chaos by the wall falling just a few months before our exams. And when I was then working in France, I met a lot of students from Central and Eastern Europe, but those were for me really exotic countries at that time. And when I was an exchange student in Austria, I had the opportunity, of course, to travel to Prague, to travel to Budapest, and to start to get to know those countries. And when I started working as such, then I was the only one in the company who had any idea about Eastern Europe. So I automatically was given those countries to take care of. And I kept, throughout my career, traveling eastwards. So it started in the Baltics, and it moved, you know, through former Yugoslavian republics and all these former Soviet republics until I was in Asia. And then in the end, I spent quite a lot of time in China, in South Korea, in Vietnam, and I absolutely loved it. So,
and you can't go more eastwards than that. You know, then you just, you did it all, right?
Pretty much. Yes, pretty much.
And you mentioned infant formula. So let's focus on China a second, Catherine. Doing business in China is complicated, especially in infant formula. So how did you learn how to navigate the market and the culture?
Firstly, I'd say that it's a process. So when I first came to China in 2009, that was as a direct result of this baby food scandal that there was in 2008 with melamine. I think this is burned into every Chinese mother's memory somehow. And we had in the company after that scandal broke, we had in the space of 3 months, 500 inquiries from different companies who were looking to have exclusivity for the Chinese market. And we whittled that down to a short list and came for an exploratory visit. And I was lucky enough that we had a partner company who kind of translated the market for us. So I had, in the very first visits, I had somebody at my side who would explain to me partly linguistically, partly culturally, and who would translate, okay, when they say this to you, what they really mean is that, you know? And I would say that after that, I was visiting China almost monthly, and I was working with two different partners. So it meant I had different experience in with both partners, both quite different companies, and I developed really quite deep relationships with a lot of people from those companies. So having a decent cultural experience and also being able to have somebody that I could ask questions to, it made such a huge difference. And, you know, being interested, wanting to learn about the questions, that was the main part of the culture piece. And for navigating infant formula, I would say in 2009, 2010, it wasn't so complicated to bring formula onto the market. That's increased over the time. And so you start, you do the initial process, and after that, you learn one step at a time. I think if you were coming into the market now and you had to really start from zero, it would be a really tough task to manage all of that regulatory questions and to do all of these inspection and audit visits that you have to have. So it's hard enough for established companies, but I'm glad that we did it. We could do it step by step.
Looking at your website, you have the tagline, International Expansion Explained. What inspired you to choose that?
You know, over the course of my career, I've worked with a lot of companies and also worked with a lot of countries. But I've always been involved in doing whole country management. So I wasn't purely involved in sales, and I never felt like I was part of the marketing department. So I needed knowledge about marketing, and I needed knowledge about the supply chain. And I also feel that many companies, they just don't know what it takes to expand internationally. And part of that fear that they have, it comes from a lack of knowledge. And I wanted to be able to write about how multifaceted it is when you go into international business. And also that if you're working as a country manager, you have this kind of Girl Friday role where you have to just roll up your sleeves and get on with anything that you need to do in the market. I think when you're on a business trip and somebody calls you and somebody asks you a question, but it's midnight in your home country, you can't suddenly say to them, oh, I'm sorry, you have to wait and I'll call the product manager tomorrow. You have to be able to answer those questions for them, because otherwise, I mean, certainly in Asia, otherwise you lose face and you lose credibility, to be honest, if you can't answer it. And so I really felt that this idea of explaining the different aspects of international expansion, both culturally, technically, and from a sales and marketing perspective, that this fitted well. I looked around for a while before I chose it, but finally settled on International Expansion Explained.
Could you better define the meaning of losing face? Because it is really, I would say, an Asian thing. Could you tell us a little bit more about that?
Losing face is when somebody is made to look silly or small or to feel uncomfortable in front of their boss or their peers, or worse still, in front of their clients. This can happen if you ask them, for example, a question that you know that they can't answer. There are kind of people who like to ask those kind of provocative questions. Or it could just happen because you're not thinking about what you're doing and saying, and you start something that actually they can't answer, and they're afraid to say no, and they feel that they have lost face because they need to say no, but they can't say no. And it's very uncomfortable for Asians.
Oh, indeed. Looking at how to manage teams across time zones and cultures, Catherine. Let's get a little bit practical with the audience here, shall we? What would be three essential tips you'd provide to the audience on how to manage international teams?
First of all, you've got to lead them by example. So it's down to you as the team leader to make sure that you learn about the cultures of the team members that you're managing and leading. You have to also know how do they see the function of you as a leader in your culture and in their culture. So it's important that you put your people first to understand how different members will likely deal with deadlines. How will they react if you give them instructions? How do they like to appear in meetings? And I think a key to this is that you have to do quite a lot of self-reflection and after meetings or after events to go through and think about how different team members reacted and whether that was what you expected due to their cultural background or whether you need to amend the way that you're dealing with them. Secondly, I would say it's really key that you over-communicate your expectations and that you offer them as much transparency as possible. I mean, a European or a US American team member possibly would like more transparency than an Asian team member. They might feel a little bit uncomfortable, like you were perhaps a weak leader if you tell them too much. But that as far as possible, they have to feel that you're honest with them and that you give them a true picture of what's happened. And thirdly, I'd say document your processes and also the progress of your team, because it can be really quite lonely if you have a team who are sitting in Vietnam or they're sitting in a completely different part of the world to the rest of you. Then maybe they have the feeling that they're sending all this information to the head office, but nothing's happening with it, or they just think they're doing it, it's pointless. So that's the one side of it. And on the other hand, if they have documented processes and they're stuck at 3 a.m. in your time, they can still continue to work. So if you can empower your team to lead themselves as far as possible, it's not easy, but then it can make your life quite a lot easier. And it also means that they can be more closer as a team.
Yeah, you nailed it. And that definitely resonated with me, Catherine. I'll bring an example. Like a while ago, I had a resource in another country. So a person I was managing, a salesperson, and I didn't communicate to this person very clearly my expectations. So I got a little bit frustrated because I wasn't very happy with this person's performance. But then I realized that actually the fault was with me because I didn't communicate exactly, or let's say clearly, what I wanted. So it was my fault. I changed my approach. So I exactly communicated what I wanted. And then the relationship and performance of this person that was in another country, so we were working remotely, really, really improved. So absolutely, Catherine, what you said is absolutely correct, indeed correct. And looking at the last 12, 14 months, so basically since the pandemic, you know, came and struck the world. Do you think that companies have changed the countries which they are looking to expand to in the past year or so?
I think certainly last year at this time, I saw a lot of companies who were starting to look much closer to home. So perhaps, for example, that European companies would be looking to close any gaps they had on the map in Eastern Europe. Whereas now, I do feel if I look at some of the Chamber of Commerce events and so on, I do feel that companies are starting to look further afield again. The hope that people will be able to travel with after vaccination and so on, it's certainly starting to feel as if people are starting to prepare to move a little bit further afield. I'm not sure if so many people as perhaps in the past are looking to go to China, because I think there's been so much negative media about China in the last 15 months, especially, which is not really very justified, but it's a fact. And a lot of people believe everything that they read in the papers, as it were. And so I think that maybe some of those other Asian countries, I was talking to people, a group of people this morning about South Korea, but also Vietnam, I think that there will be some good opportunities. And I think a lot of companies are looking to move into those markets quite soon.
And looking at the data, do you see an increase or perhaps a decrease in the number of companies looking to expand internationally since COVID-19 came to say hi?
It's hard to say, because I think initially companies stopped further expansion. They stopped wanting to invest in further expansion, at least. But on the other hand, Europe has so many smaller countries like Austria, for example, where I'm based, and they're dependent on export for their economy. So they can't survive just by relying on the domestic market. And domestically, we're still very much in the middle of a pandemic here in Austria. So if you want to increase your sales, then you have to go abroad. The problem is, it's really difficult if you're not working with a partner already. It's really difficult to build those relationships from scratch when you can't visit in person.
I completely agree. I mean, building a relationship from scratch on Zoom, it's not easy. I mean, probably, I mean, lots of companies are doing this, but it's not easy, especially maybe if you're looking for, I don't know, a new distributor or even new supplier.
Especially in Asia, it's not easy.
And what is, in your opinion, Catherine, what are the most important success factors for companies wanting to expand into new markets? What do they need to possess to win?
I think, firstly, they need to treat international expansion as something which is a long-term strategic success factor for their company. They can't just receive an inquiry and hope that they're going to become overnight millionaires in, I don't know, in Burundi or somewhere like that. I'm not saying those kind of success stories never happen, but generally I think it's important that they put a strategy in place and that they're prepared to follow through on that strategy, because it's one thing to have a strategy, it's another thing to execute on the strategy if they really want to be successful. I read a statistic a couple of weeks ago that 90% of US companies don't have any kind of written strategy, which I actually found quite interesting.
90%. Wow.
Which I found quite interesting. Yeah. Then I would say, if they want to succeed, success begins at home. So you have to do the necessary research, because you can avoid making the errors that other people have made. You can get expert help, or you can get additional training for your staff, or you can hire additional people who already have that expertise. You don't need to reinvent the wheel as such, but you do need to make sure that you do the desk work before you go into new international markets. And I think the third success factor is for people to, let's say, to know themselves very well, what they do very well, and to be prepared to put the necessary resources into the markets. So if you have markets where you really do need people to visit in person, then you have to accept that costs. You have to accept that you need marketing budgets. Even if you're going into a market via e-commerce, you also need to understand how do the consumers work in those kind of markets. And so I think sometimes it sounds a little bit old-fashioned. Some of my colleagues who work in e-commerce, they don't like to hear it so much, but you still have to do this desk work and this research and strategy, because otherwise you'd just be a flash in the pan, as we would say in England, that, you know, it just sparks, but there's no real fire behind it that keeps burning.
According to your experience, what is the typical problem that companies do when trying to expand internationally? If you had to pick one, I know there must be many, but one problem, Catherine.
This is one of my favorite top topics. I would say that they go into a market, they don't take a structured approach to choosing which markets to go into. And so they enter into the wrong markets. Maybe it's because, you know, the CEO would like to go and play golf in the south of France, so they think France would be a nice market. Or they have somebody who would like to collect air miles, so they take a market who's much further away. You know, Australia is quite good for that if you're based in Europe. You know, these are all wrong reasons for entering into markets. And I think that there are too many companies who enter into markets for very emotional reasons rather than on very objective terms.
And I've got one final question, Catherine, that I ask everyone who comes on the show, and that is to tell us about one memorable moment from your international career. I know you have many, many episodes, but you have to pick one. And it can be a good episode, successful episode, a funny episode, or even a bad, let's say, catastrophic one.
I think this is the hardest question of the day, to be honest, just to pick one. But I would like to mention one time when I think it was my very first business trip to Iran. And it was a little bit of a process, let's say, for me to even get there, because I have a British passport. And it was at the same time, a couple of months earlier, George Bush had been talking about axes of evil. And so they didn't really like my passport very much at the embassy. But I arrived at, I think, 4 or 5 in the morning. And so when I then had to get up for a meeting at 9 the next day, I was really, really tired. And usually if you travel a lot for work, you're used to eating alone. And I don't think anything of it normally. And I thought, shall I stay? Shall I order room service? Because I didn't want to put a headscarf on to go for breakfast. And then I thought, okay, I have a meeting, so let's go. I've got to go for meeting anyway, so headscarf. And it's really hard to fit a headscarf onto my very short hair so that it doesn't slip. And I was really nervous entering into this dining room, and I looked around, and the dining room was full of Arab guys, and behind them, as they were all sitting at different tables, behind them were their armed bodyguards. There were maybe 25 guys with automatic weapons standing in the dining room of this hotel. So I just grabbed some eggs or something very quick, just ate something and kind of ran away again. And it turned out that all the leadership of Hezbollah was actually in this hotel, and they were visiting Tehran for some kind of conference at the same time as me. And so this was for me kind of, okay, welcome to Iran, you know.
That was certainly a peculiar experience.
So
I mean, yeah. What a coincidence.
Yes.
And Catherine, I would like to wrap this up by asking you to tell us a little bit more about your current role. And after listening to this episode, who should connect with you?
I am a partner at Uniconsult Vic, which is, we offer export consulting. And we help small and medium companies to find business partners. Or we also offer a done-for-you kind of sales service, as well as training or one-on-one support. So we work with mostly SMEs in the consumer goods space who are looking to expand into either Eastern Europe, Near East, or Asia. I know that's quite a big part of the world, but you know, we usually focus on one or two markets with our clients, or occasionally with individuals who are looking to learn more about international business and who are looking for some kind of support, training on a kind of coaching basis. So those would be my people that I would be looking to connect with.
Catherine, I want to thank you for your insights. Thank you for joining us on the International Business Podcast.
Thank you so much for inviting me. It's been really fun.
Subscribe today to listen to more international business stories. We have new guests every Monday. Connect with us on LinkedIn, info in the show notes. See you next week. Cheers.